story.
We want it been.
Welcome to episode 130 of the Smugglers Galaxy podcast, your favorite Star Wars podcast for smugglers in the galaxy. This morning we got Jonathan Robertson with us. I remembered it.
Yeah, no, it's Robinson.
Robinson. Shoot. I used to work with a Robertson like back 20, 30 years ago. And so I'd always do the same thing. She'd have the same issue where you forget the T. And of course, Jason. Guys, how you guys doing this morning?
Very well. Thank you. Awesome. Sorry.
Jason's in the clouds.
Yeah, sorry.
Jason's got his head in his clouds more than once. He changed the background to Cloud City. And as always, we have gremlins. And it never ceases to amaze you how hard that can throw you off your game.
Yeah. Like before I even start, I started getting ready. We record at 9:30 on Saturdays. I started at 9 and I realized that my Facebook wasn't allowing any messages through on my computer. So I had to quickly switch over because I only had a half hour. I couldn't fool with this for a couple hours.
You start getting ready at 9 for this show?
Today I did. Okay. Not normally.
All right, good. Because I'm like 9:25. I'm like, oh man, I got to go get ready for the record.
That's most mornings. But because we had Jonathan on this morning, I wanted to make sure I was ready. And like the worst case scenario is that we're fooling around for a half hour trying to get this thing up and running.
Right. Yeah, when we got guests, I don't like wasting their time. So
I've got an 8:30 call over here in New Orleans. So
Oh, yeah, that's right. You are in New Orleans. You see, that's I'm like, all right, because Jason was like, Jonathan wants to come on, and I'm like, okay. And then I see your face, and I recognize you a little bit. And then now you mentioned New Orleans, I remember you even more. So it's I remember faces, but never names.
No, that's fine.
Good.
Oh, I'm finished.
How do you guys know each other?
Well, I've seen Glenn, at different shows. I thought the last time was up in Cincinnati. He was up there, and I know formerly met him at ICCC, I believe, for the very first time. But I've been aware of Glenn's presence because I listened to all his shows and everything in that regard. But not really being able to meet either one of you until I met Glenn, I believe, up in Nashville for the very first time. And of course, he has that connection to Louisiana. I'm not native to the state, but know that a couple of you guys have gone over there to Georgia, made your livelihood there. And there's only maybe a handful of us here in Louisiana that actually collect or talk Star Wars at all. It's not as much as you would think coming out of, there's a lot of cosplayers and whatnot, but when it comes to the collectible side of it, and especially vintage, it's very few and far between.
Yeah. When I was down there for Chewbacca's, I found the comic book store, and then they're like, oh yeah, there's a collectible store, but it was closed on Monday. And it's hard. I like trying to shop when I'm in out of town, and there is nothing in New Orleans to
now. Glenn, what about Slidell? Have you gone through Slidell?
I have not.
It's going to sound like a pitch, but the thing is that there's a comic book shop that my friend owns there. And I think next time you're down through, because I assume you have to come down through I-10 anyway, bypassing Slidell. And the thing is, there's a really wonderful vintage store there. I don't want to be gauche and name the name if that's not proper.
No, but go for it, man.
Showcase Comics and Collectibles. And okay, if that's something, next time you're down to see family and whatnot, hit them up. I think, you'll find a nice little bit of vintage offerings there. And but it's weird because it's such a small cell of individuals that we have down here. And it's not like the big cities, especially in the Southeast. I know it seems like, compared to the North and the West, I mean, they have the numbers. They have the fans that, you know, can actually go after what they want and find what they want. Down here in the Southeast, it seems like it's a little bit more slim pickings, but at the same time, and even in the smaller states like Mississippi and Louisiana, maybe Alabama to a point, it's not much that we find. And those of us who can gravitate towards each other and find that common ground, a common love, you know, of the hobby, it's nice when we do eventually, you know, come across them. And right now it seems like on the North Shore, and I know you'll know that term, the North Shore and everything seems to be kind of the haps, seems to be where it really occurs, as opposed to New Orleans proper. Right. They're just concerned with Anne Rice novels and voodoo, and you know, it's like they don't, you know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
And I would have thought there would have been a much better or more impactful aspect of the collecting scene down there in New Orleans. But quite honestly, I coming into the state in 2004, I was kind of disappointed by it, and I had to find those little pockets, those few individuals who spoke nerd like I did. So
what part of the city or what part of the state are you in?
Covington.
Okay. I my geographic knowledge of New Orleans stinks, but I kind of, it, yeah.
So, you know, obviously the 24-mile causeway on top of the lake.
Yeah.
That's literally what separates me from the rest of, you know, civilization, so to speak. And so, you know, that big hole that's in the state of Louisiana, obviously, that's what dominates from a geographical standpoint, that separation between the North Shore and New Orleans proper. And it's, you know, that's what I do, is like to commute into work. That's what I have to do all the time. Yeah. Yeah, that's
that, yeah. That bridge is something. Yeah, first time, you know, ever, you know, you take my wife on that bridge, and she's just like, "How long is this bridge?" And it's like, "It's 24 miles." Mm-hmm. You're on it for a while, you know. And every time we take people in New Orleans, they get on the Lake Pontchartrain Bridge, and it's just like, "What the hell are you guys thinking, dude?" Sorry.
Faster than a boat.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
So I have a couple questions for Jonathan, just to get to know you a little bit more before we jump into like pickups and news and just talking stuff. You had mentioned you commute to work. You work in the movie industry. What do you do?
I'm what's known as a second assistant cameraman. So in lay terms, it's basically the guy who just claps the slate and assists the first AC, which is the focus puller. The man who keeps everything in focus, or the woman who keeps everything in focus. And I'm the one who assists them through the changing of lenses, or if we change up the format of the camera, excuse me, into handheld, steady cam, onto the crane, back to the dolly, if we have to change up like that. So it's a never-ending process of conforming the camera to what the director and the director of photography need for that shot. And then, of course, it's marking actors, and it's that kind of relationship between other crew members, between other departments like grips and electricians that you have to, you know, keep up. And so it's obviously a very niche vocation, but it's, as you know, there in Georgia, which kind of took the... It took the title from us from Hollywood South, you know, a couple years back, like 2015, 2016,
yeah,
and has just been running with it, you know, as you guys know. And that's the kind of traffic I would not want to have to deal with if I was asked to relocate some.
No, Atlanta traffic's ridiculous.
Trying to think of recent movies shot there. There was that Hugh Jackman movie.
Mm-hmm.
There was one little movie.
What?
Shot there about 3 years ago.
Which one?
Bill and Ted 3.
Oh, Bill and Ted 3.
Yes.
Are you allowed to talk about the movies you've worked on?
Yeah, because I think it's long past, I would assume. I mean, because the NDA and everything is would not be applicable towards anything recently for me.
Right.
Of course, I don't have the high caliber of like Marvel and films like what's coming out of Georgia. But at the same time, so you mentioned, I don't know if the Hugh Jackman you were referring to was Reminiscence.
That's the thing.
Yeah, we shot it as Jade Earring, and at the time that was a hard, very hard film.
It was a great film.
You liked it?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, good. I never watched my I never watched my stuff. I just never, I never get to sit down and watch anything. It's always going to be kids' movies and things like that, and obviously Marvel and Disney. But in the aspect of a huge undertaking like that movie was it, and Hugh was just a dream. He absolutely is. I think anything you've ever heard about him is absolutely true. Kind of like Tom Hanks in that sense. And their Greyhound with Tom Hanks, we shot that in a World War II film, which is on a gimbal. You know, it was not, I know what might have been seen on screen was obviously nothing we depicted in real life, except for being on the USS Kidd, which was on the Mississippi River. The second G.I. Joe movie, that was fun. Yeah, and I came up from I'm an old timer in the sense of I came up when we actually did shoot film, not just digital. I was a film loader for 12 good years of my life, and I've been in the camera department since 2000. So coming up on 23, 24 years of being a camera assistant, and but having my hands in the film magazines with the negative was always just a wonderful thing. And it's something that, a lot of the young kids now who are getting into the film industry probably won't have that opportunity.
Right.
So, but
they'll be changing out memory cards.
That's right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. A half terabyte, if not all the way to a terabyte, capacity. And that's like when we used to have to thread the film in the compartment, the body of the camera itself. If you didn't do it right, it would chew it up. it was the worst sound you could ever imagine. But it's I cherish that time in the film industry, and it is very rewarding. It can be very rewarding, or you can find out quickly that that's just not something you're apt to do. Just like in any career in life. But the state of Louisiana has been very good to me and my family, and I've been obviously, as I've been able to grow a large family here, as it's been deemed through how much work has come through.
Awesome.
We are a Star Wars podcast. You listen to us. I would assume that watching Star Wars as a young kid got you into the film.
Yes, sir. I would say so. I would say that to go onto another tangent, I thought watching Raiders of the Lost Ark was going to be the way I wanted to become an archaeologist. And what it turned out to be, it was the love of that movie. It was the love of the process of, well, how is that done? How do they put that on celluloid and then allow us to suspend our disbelief for just a couple moments and really believe there's some dude being chased by a boulder, or that there's actual spaceships in space fighting each other, and two guys are clashing with two laser swords. It makes, it doesn't make sense when you read it on paper, but when you see it, your brain really just shuts it off and kind of says, I'll go with it. And so what is that process by which that makes us endearing fans for so long?
Yeah.
I think that is the language of cinema. And I do believe that is, and your brain will absolutely know when it's wrong. Your brain will absolutely know when it's like, no, this doesn't jive, or when the effects look bad, or again, when it's just too many effects and the story's not there to really hold it. That was the whole point about Star Wars. It wasn't just all those special effects. It was that story that really enraptured us into that universe.
Speaking of Raiders, like, there was somebody underneath that truck being dragged. It may not have been Harrison Ford, but when you watch that, you're 100% certain there is someone underneath that vehicle, feeling the rocks, using a whip as the thing to get them back. And then you watch Dial of Destiny and you see them fall out of the Super Bowl trailer. You see them fall out of the airplane and you're like, is that real? That looks like it's all CG. And that's disappointing, because most of Raiders, all those stunts were real stunts, and swinging through the jungle vines of Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. a lot of people didn't like things of that, like the nuke the fridge and the aliens. I didn't like the fact that they're using CG to swing through the jungle.
Yeah, I agree. And that seems to be a lot of people, the turnoff that a lot of people had on Crystal Skull. Plus, you know, from an artistic standpoint, you had the DP who was not the same DP as the first three, obviously.
Right.
You know,
he passed away.
That's correct. And even though he lived a very long life. But the thing is that he didn't emulate the style or the lighting. If you know, you look at it, it seems like I've heard other podcasts where they talk about where it seems like everything's a virtual set almost. The way it's, even though it was in a real setting, it felt like it was lit in such a false way, or you know, it just doesn't look natural, and it doesn't look as appealing as what was set up with those first three movies. I think that's a major drawback. And you know, and to Spielberg's credit, I'm glad he kind of stepped away from this fifth one. Maybe that's exactly what it needed. And you know, I love, like all of us growing up in that era, I love most of everything he's ever done. Yeah. But I think that is very admirable to say, like, look, someone else take the reins, and I think we're probably going to get a good product.
I think so too, because it sounds like from Harrison Ford talking, Steven Spielberg's DNA is woven throughout this new movie. When you look at Logan, which James Mangold wrote at the end of Wolverine's life, we're just moving sideways to the end of Indiana Jones's life, and I'm very excited to see what he adds to that.
And we shot down here in, you know, New Orleans and New Mexico. So it's got that kind of tie too as well, which I wasn't part of that crew, but from what I heard, it was a well-organized crew, and there wasn't a lot of wasting of time for what Mangold wanted. So much, again, to his credit, that man knows, I have to admit, probably knows how to, you know, run a movie set and get exactly what he wants. So the finished product, whether it be Indiana Jones property or any other kind of movie that he's ever worked on, will show those efforts.
I'm really excited to talk to you, especially with this knowledge I know that you have of the film industry. We wanted to have you on for the end of the year wrap up, the 2022 wrap up. I'm very curious now to know what you thought of Book of Boba Fett, Andor, and Obi-Wan. What were your thoughts of those Star Wars shows?
You know, it starts off like, I think all of us, it's every little kid's dream, and now as adults, that we get this experience, that we get this opportunity to have the what ifs answered.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like we were asking these questions, like, well, what happens? What happened prior to the episode four, the setup and everything? Or what happens? Did Boba Fett really die in such a dishonorable way is what we thought in Jedi.
Yeah.
I mean, to have such a wonderful character like that, you know, end it so I'll pass that word. The thing is that it just wasn't graceful. It wasn't. Yes. You know, what we would thought was such a bad character like that. And so, you know, here's the time to redeem that. And that's great because we can retcon everything. So it seems, even though you didn't mention it, totally love Mandalorian. That you had me there. I can't wait for, you know, season three. Yeah. I mean, even my wife loves that. Go figure. She follow this. She can't stand. Absolutely. Cannot stand it. Doesn't understand it.
You're motioning to your collection room behind you.
Yes. Sorry. So yeah, yes, no, exactly. It, you know, and we're doing radio. So the thing is that showed that true potential that Disney had, and the people that were, you know, heralding the efforts for putting that good, so to speak, television or platform streaming for us to view, they actually knew what they were doing and had the, and wasn't just all about the money and everything, but were really, I think, bringing fans closer, much the way that, you know, Clone Wars did years before. Yeah, and I just during the pandemic only went back and watched Clone Wars, and how gratifying that was for an old guy like me, because I thought, like, that's for the kids.
Yeah.
Let the kids have that, because it's just not me. But when I went online and I decided to watch them in the order that the internet kind of told you to watch it in, because I was curious to do it that way. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty rewarding, because I'm a chronological kind of guy. I want to see it unfold as it's supposed to be told. And so when we get to Book of Boba Fett, I thought this is going to be great, and a little crestfallen when I did see it. And then they kind of sandwiched in that Mandalorian aspect into it, and I thought, okay, well, it's got that redeeming quality to it, because at least we get to see a little bit more Mandalorian. With Obi-Wan, I think it's that same kind of tired, you know, criticism that, you know, we hear from one podcast to the other about how it's just like, oh yeah, we get to see, you know, Obi-Wan be a fishmonger by day and then, you know, try to be a social justice warrior by night, you know, so to speak. And there were aspects of it that I loved. Like, I did like the Vader Anakin aspect that, you know, you didn't kill Darth Vader, I did. Yeah. Like, wow, that's pretty deep. And and so it had its moments, but I don't think it was as hard hitting as Mandalorian. I think my heart still belongs to Mandalorian.
Mm-hmm. And Andor?
I didn't get past the first episode. That's my fault because I just kind of, I don't know. I again with the work that I have and everything, I'm very I barely get to watch anything. And then of course, you know, the kids kind of dominate what gets to be seen on TV. So I'm kind of like, come what may. I hear all the good things about it. I hear that it's one of those slow reveals that, you know, you do invest your time with it, and it's not one of those that we got to cram it all in 2 hours and get out of here. It's right. You know, and that's what the movies suffer from, obviously. But when you have that opportunity to unfold it page by page like a book does almost, then it's a little more rewarding. I think it's something that, you know, we as viewers can appreciate, but we still do live in a, you know, McDonaldization of society where I need it right now, fast, and I, you know, hot and fresh, and I got to get out of here and consume it. Yeah, and so the thing is, it's nice to slow down. I think that was what was so wonderful about the pandemic, is it did allow us to slow down, look at life, look at each other in that sense. And, you know, that's the best thing I think I took out of that, plus can apply it to life later on. So,
yeah.
Yeah, Andor is definitely is. It's a slow burn. You've got to really work, I think, to get. Because what they released the first like three episodes back to back or something, that really helped that show, because I think if they were to release those once a week, it would have hurt that show real bad, because like you did, you're halfway through the first episode going, where's this going? And at least at that point, you could go, okay, cool, let me see where the next episode's going to take me. You know, and it's sitting there waiting, like you said, hot now, ready, and you could at least experience those to back to back to back. And okay, let's see where it's going.
Exactly. You know, it's my fault I didn't give it a little bit more time, and it's always there, ready for me to take it back when I'm ready. But
like
again,
the Clone Wars.
Yeah, exactly. And that a wonderful thing, because like if this was the 1980s. We would have to wait for it to maybe come out on VHS, I guess. We couldn't go back to the theater to watch this. And when you did miss that opportunity, well, you know, when does it get aired on television later on? Does it come back into a format like VHS or DVD? That's just obviously, as we were kids and everything, we had to be patient. We had to learn patience. And now we can have it kind of whenever we want, as long as we have that streaming platform.
Yeah, we're all old enough to realize or remember, okay, you had to be in front of the TV at 8 o'clock on a Friday night if you wanted to watch something. There was no, oh, let me see what's on, or, you know, I remember having a set of VCR, you know, and crazy stuff like that. Now it's all at your fingertips, and it's like, you kids, y'all are so lucky.
Yeah, times have changed.
Yep. I remember, and talking to my parents, like, because my dad was on TV for something, and you're like, well, what happened? How'd you record it? And he's like, you can't. And if you weren't sitting in front of the TV at the moment it happened, it was gone forever.
Mm-hmm. I can't imagine back in the 50s or the 60s or, you know, I mean, or 70s even, to that point where it's like, if you totally missed something, you'd have to wait to either, like a commercial, you just waited for it to recycle back around, as opposed to like, well, I can get on YouTube and look at any kind of advertising. Like if I miss the Super Bowl commercials, then, you know, think about that Super Bowl commercials from the late 60s and early 70s. You know, I mean, I know they would re-air them if it was a national spot. They would do so throughout the year. But to miss it all, you know, in conjunction with other ones that were going on and everything, it seems like, wow, I just, you'd have to listen to a friend, you know, retell it or, you know, recount what they saw. So as opposed to us just like, oh, I missed that spot. Let me look on YouTube and see, you know, what's been uploaded. The things that we have, we basically have the libraries of Alexandria at our fingertips, you know, in a figurative standpoint, because, you know, just the knowledge that is there. And if it's not lost to time or the ravages of, you know, decay and poor storage, like what things have gone through in the past, today, like
Doctor Who, there's,
I was going to say,
seasons,
yeah,
exactly, of Doctor Who that are lost.
That is, wow. Isn't that amazing that they would have erased or just thrown those out because of necessity? It's not they were just being, you know, jerks about it. I mean, obviously, to have to store that much from the 60s the way that they did. Mm-hmm. And where would you put all that? Where would the BBC be putting all that at the time? And I'm not even a Doctor Who fan, but I can appreciate the storage of media. And what it's like also, what is it like Schlesinger? Leon Schlesinger, with Warner Brothers and everything, he would wash cells in order to save money and reuse those cells for animation. So in Warner Brothers, there's early cells that are absolutely gone because there's even film of him and another colleague, they photographed it washing cells and who could wash the cells the fastest. And it's the most incredible thing in the world. Like, wow, that's a lot of history and a lot of, you know, money, if you think about it, down the drain.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, that's why that stuff's so valuable. You know, like people think, oh, I want to go back in a time machine and save my toys. It's like, if everybody did that, these toys would not be valuable. Look at Power of the Force 2. Everybody saved their crap at that time. And it's because people played with their toys is why it's so valuable. I mean, and bringing that stuff back to Kenner, how many wax molds or wax sculpts got reused?
Yeah, it's neat to read Ron Salvatore's article he did on the archives, and the fact that they could reuse those certain figures, like say Big Head Han to represent Han Hoth, and then the Stormtrooper for Hoth Stormtrooper, and then, you know, Blue Snaggletooth for Bosk. It was neat, like, oh my gosh, the correlation, the similarities are irrefutable. It's absolutely stunning. When you see, and you know what, just to save a buck, absolutely, because it costs a lot of money to bring those toys to the shelf.
Right.
These companies aren't playing around. If they can actually save money, and that's in the case of the double telescoping saver, it was just not, you know, it was cost prohibitive to do something like that for as long as they wanted. And it was a noble idea. Wonderful. You know, but would it stand up to the LP a logo that would adorn most card fronts, early 12-back card fronts? And no, it could not. And, you know, Chow was going to go through that like, you know, like nothing, like a wet pepper bag. And so the thing is that that goes for anything that Kenner, you know, did with, say, $6 Million Man into Star Wars transition, or with Star Wars and Superpowers into Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. We constantly see that, and it's and other toy companies too. I mean, He-Man is the biggest offender of that. Honestly, how many times can you use a buck and arms and legs? You know, so in that sense. But kudos to them for still being able to make something, you know, very interesting and not and still sell to millions of units to millions of children. It's incredible.
Right.
Speaking of interesting, that backdrop behind you is incredible. You've got, I see Bib Fortuna over your shoulder. How long have you been collecting? What do you collect? You know, are those things like things that you bought off the store shelves, or have you gotten these at, you know, the Cincinnati Toy Show and things like that, ICCC?
No, it's just a fake filter. It's like your best friend. This doesn't exist. No.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. It's a virtual set. The the thing is, so like all of us, you know, started playing with the vintage at an early age. I'm a Jedi kid in the sense that I was born in 76. So I wasn't there with the older individuals in the sense of saw Star Wars, saw Empire as a kid, too young. Jedi was a different matter, and, you know, saw the movie twice and loved it. And so by the time Christmas of 83 comes around, actually as early as Christmas of 82, started getting Star Wars toys because on a whim, my mother went to a garage sale down here, down in Alabama, in Mobile is where I'm from originally. And she presented them to me just to see how these 3¾-inch figures would interest me. And apparently it went off without a hitch. And so she decided to buy more by the time, you know, birthdays came. And then we lead up to Christmas of 83. Mm-hmm. It was just a cornucopia, a smorgasbord of anything Jedi. And it kind of opens your eyes as to how much stuff that they were still doling out. Cause like you mentioned in the last, episode, the collect all 92 bug and the whole idea of why collect all 92 is there. It's very important, you know, that it's represented and you should be able to get that still, regardless of what the card front says, mm-hmm. you still have that figure to pick up from a previous movie. And that's a beautiful thing for a child like me, who's coming into it late, so to speak. But G.I. Joe would kind of, you know, take the reins after Jedi. There was no other movie there. There was no other interest, so to speak. So G.I. Joe took it from 82 all the way to 89. By 89, I was already jaded with what I was looking at with Hasbro's offerings because there was a figure that I just purchased that was the same one from 1985. And I'm like, why? You know, it's the same figure, but a different paint scheme. And I felt like why am I wasting my money? Plus, now I'm 13 years old, and I don't want to play with toys anymore. There's a mind switch there that occurred that allowed me to start being a collector. And I was in eighth grade at the moment, and I just started asking all my kids in private school, like, hey, you got any of those old Star Wars figures? Because I could, if you don't want them anymore, I'll buy them off of you. So I started collecting loose, and I hit the flea market, and all the way from 89 to about 93, I was doing that, and you know, just addicted like crazy, trying to collect the stuff that came before my time period, knowing that there was stuff that existed that I never even saw on the toy shelves, and that led to finding out that there was carded stuff still out there. I just thought all that stuff had been consumed, gobbled up, it's gone, you know, and now all that exists is loose. And boy, was I wrong when there was a gentleman that lived in an apartment complex behind my neighborhood. Someone turned me on to him, and he was just sitting on an apartment full of old store stock, boxed, carded. The picture that I have from that time period, in the early 1990s, he used the whole front room of his apartment as like a warehouse. And what he was doing back in the late 80s, he bought stuff for pennies on the dollar, local to Mobile. And so the thing was that he just, you know, hoarded it. And then in the early 90s, he got onto the whole toy shop magazine aspect of doing commerce through the mail. And so not only was he doing all of that business from a national standpoint, but he was doing it globally as well. So when I met him in my front yard, he pulled up one night. My father's very suspicious of all this. He's like,
why? What? Hey, there's a guy, guy next door. And
hey, kid, you get in my van. I got a Luke Skywalker.
I'll take you to it. No, he basically brought the product to the street corner, you know, to the street, the curb. And so my dad is just like, what is going on here? I mean, he had heard of drug deals. He knew that they were possible, you know? And so me and my friend from high school were, you know, poised. We had $20 and $30 respectively in our pockets, ready to spend whatever we could. And this gentleman pulls up in a sports hatchback and, you know, pops at the back. And then of course there's like four or five computer paper boxes. Wow. And he starts flipping lids. And I'm like, oh, look at that. There's Buck Rogers in one. There's, you know, Kenner's Indiana Jones in another. Some G.I. Joe. Ooh, he's got my whole childhood here. This is wonderful. Get to the Star Wars. Like, ooh, a lot of Jedi. Some Empire Strikes Back mixed up in there. And they start flipping and flipping. And my friend immediately pulls out like a 65A and a Obi-Wan and a 65A Darth Vader. And I'm like, ooh, those look as fresh as like 1983. What's going on? And the guy's like, yeah, you know, I normally charge $15 a piece. I'll let you have them both for, you know, give me $20 and we'll be happy. I'll be happy. So
oh
Evan,
my God.
Yeah. So my friend Evan grabs those two. I'm like, oh man, I hope I can get as lucky as that. So I keep flipping and I'm seeing a bunch of Java's goons and, you know, nothing really that's standing out. Cause I'm wanting earlier the better, it seems like. And then of course, oh, Boba Fett. You're great. It's another 65A. And so, you know, pull him out. Say, like, well, what do you want for him? Yeah, I'll do $10 on him. I said, okay. And then and it's like, well, I got another $20. What do I spend it on? And I found this weird carded, and I could have sworn I'd seen him up in Birmingham before, because that was only, we didn't have a Toys R Us down in Mobile. We did have one up in Birmingham when I'd go visit relatives, and I saw a wall of Power of the Force. And I'm like, what is all this? It's like this witchcraft with a coin and all that. It just makes no sense. Like, what are they doing? Going backwards by putting a Luke Stormtrooper, you know, on the card? It's like, I was so engrossed with G.I. Joe that I went and that time when I was in Birmingham, I went and bought a tripwire from G.I. Joe manufactured with two left arms. And that must be my so-called reward or punishment for having not bought Power of the Force back in 1985, 86, when I saw all that. But to go back to, you know, the to 1993, here I'm now looking at carded EV-99. And I'm like, oh, that was always a cool robot. I thought she really, you know, was menacing. And I love that voice, that Richard Marquand voice. And so basically, I said, how much you want for her? Oh, this one comes with a coin. So it's going to be $20. And I think the guy probably knew I had $20. I'm sure he just kind of, you know, he wanted to gobble it up. So I'm like, ah, okay, fine. So $30 was spent that night. And then, of course, you know, have to do the walk of shame to go back into the house because my dad's like, well, what did you spend? What did you get? Well, I spent all my $30. Like, you better stop that, man. He's leaving with your money. He's like, you know, he's like literally thinking, I just got, you know, highway robbed. And that it was the poorest decision in the world at that time. And it's one of those things that when I do have my father come down and visit, that, you know, I like to kind of, and out of total respect to my father, I just like to kind of remind him, like, this was a pretty good investment, Dad. I mean, if you at its time, it wasn't an investment. It was just I wanted that because it was Boba Fett, or it was a, you know, toy that, you know, any one of us probably would have, you know, picked up at that time. And it was only seen as in that light and not as in like, this thing's going to be worth a lot of money one day. I didn't care. And I thought $10 was a good amount of money at the time. So that started the bug. So ever since, it's been mint on card. You know, I'm up to, you know, 570 specimens, all of them different for just Star Wars alone. You know, I know that's not, there's other, you know, collectors out there that deserve, you know, mention, like, you know, Jeff Jacob and Jeff Ektenkamp and Ian Sanderson, all those kind of individuals have, I know, you know, far greater numbers than myself. I'm a, you know, easy, you know, I'm the tortoise in the race, so to speak. And I'm happy to just come across, because I know patience has been mentioned, you know, in other episodes, and I really find that rewarding. I really do. I don't go hunting for certain things. I just let, if I come across it, that's when I feel like that's the opportune time.
Very
good. But
the real question is, do you still have those two figures?
Yes, sir. I do. I still own them. You know, I think the only thing I ever really, I kind of like a black hole collector in the sense that anything I take into the collection, it just kind of stays here. It doesn't really escape unless it's an upgrade. And so anything that was bought in the 90s at that time, because it was just, I might have been overwhelmed a little bit and probably bought something that had a crack in it, or, you know, a bad litho tear or something like that, that's why maybe something like that would not have remained in the collection. But it has literally been replaced with something of similar the exact same characteristic and identity. Like I said, everything, the 570 carded figures I do have are all unique in every, you know, aspect. I like it because it's a curation of how Kenner, you know, did their packaging. And I think that's what I appreciate more than anything else. It's not about like, how much can I obtain here before I die? It's quite honestly, it's the appreciation of what was put into this to attract us and our parents to buy that toy at the time. And I what I do like is the minutia of it. I do like the weird things that do pop up while collecting this stuff, because we're learning something every day. I mean, there's, you know, when that removable limb 3PO on a 45 bat came out 3 years ago, 4 years ago, whatever that was, out of Hong Kong, and there were several specimens that came out of that eBay purchase, mm-hmm. starting with Bill Cable. Mm-hmm. That was something we thought we'd never see the light of day, nor was it ever explained why that 45 back removable M3PO never hit the market. There obviously is something internal that Kenner did not like coming from that factory that didn't meet requirements or whatever, because by all, you know, intents and purposes, he should have been there, just like the Sensorscope R2 was on a 45 back. That was his debut. And that should have been 3PO's debut with the removable limbs. But for whatever weird reason, they held back on that and kept them there at that factory in Hong Kong. And until whatever that was, 2018, 2019, when it finally came to light, that's just an incredible thing. And, you know, again, we keep seeing, what was it? The Made in Taiwan Boba Fett 48 back Empire Strikes Back card back that was shown here recently. That's an interesting, you know, I think, like Ben Sheehan said, that was a test. That was what that Taiwan factory was producing to, you know, to show what we could do once the Jedi stuff starts kicking in. And it's kind of retroactive refits that, you know, Kenner would tend to do. And I don't believe that as a production example, like Ben Sheehan had said. So
it's amazing the stuff that sneaks out of factories,
yeah.
man.
Yeah,
that's right. Especially modern, even in modern times. I mean, as many prototypes that aren't supposed to really be out there. And yet, you know, we're hoping, gladly so, those guys who do collect that stuff have that opportunity more so than anything, you know, vintage. But even the vintage stuff that was taken home, and, you know, those employees who just wanted it as a reminder of their work, or pass it along to children in the neighborhood, or whatever they, or their own children. Because I know that a lot of that stuff can appear in garage sales around Cincinnati due to the fact that the employee just simply gave it to their kids to kind of have fun with. And they didn't see it as any kind of monetary advancement, especially with nothing insidious, you know.
Right.
So,
yeah, because I've got stuff that has been confirmed, and it was like, oh, I threw that stuff away, or I thought I threw that stuff away, and people dig it out the trash.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's just amazing, you know? Wow.
But yeah. So I think, Jason, also most of this has been acquired through, you go back to the '90s. It was, I like the in-person purchases. I think, like we all do, we get a satisfaction from that, knowing like your brain's at ease. You will easily hand over the money, you know, in a comfortable, you know, state than if you were sending it through the mail or PayPaling somebody. Even with goods and services, you still maybe get skunked. And doing something, you know, in person, obviously you have that relationship for just a small time, or it may be, you know, grow into something better throughout life. And that's, you know, like, I remember you, I purchased from you before. I'm happy to do it again because you were an honest guy. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the wonderful thing about those early toy shows and those situations that afforded you to look at the product in person. Of course, a lot of eBay in 97, once that's opened up to us, 97, 98 was just anything you could possibly imagine you could have. And I think that quelled the idea that, oh, blue snaggletooth tooth is so rare. No. It's like, it's just it's abundant, but everybody wants it. Just like the Boba Fett tax that everybody talks about. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants him, and he's abundant, but there's always going to be a high price set upon that individual or that figure. And so, and then of course, into modern times where now Facebook is its own marketplace. And, you know, we get to, again, you can forego or get around the whole eBay fees and all that hassle and just do it kind of in a more informal atmosphere. And but again, it always goes back to those meetups and those times where we can get together and you know, show what we have to sell or buy from each other. And again, I think that does tend to solidify relationships.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely. The community is important.
It is.
Yeah. The more I get involved with the community, the better it gets.
It does.
And it's taken a long time to get there. I mean, we've been doing the club for like 5 years and been doing this podcast for a couple of years, but it's like, it takes a long time and it takes effort and it takes going out of state and you get what you give out of this community, you know? So definitely, you know, if you guys don't know of a local club or local, you know, hunt a club down or something, you know, get involved with the community. Don't, you know, there's other nerds out there and, mm-hmm. and it's going to do you nothing but good to get involved with them.
That's right. That's right. We, right after Katrina, we had started up a club in, based out of Baton Rouge, and it was called Red Stick Rebellion.
Oh, no.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And, nice. Yeah, that's it. And it kind of like dissolved by 2015. Oh, but it was, that's what really, the ones of us that know of each other came together through that venue. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty rewarding. I mean, because it wasn't just like, oh, we all collect toys. No, there were the cosplayers. There were the people who loved the novels. There were the people who, you know, at that time were, you know, digging on the Clone Wars. And, you know, and of course, brought in younger guys, too. So it wasn't just a bunch of old dudes. There were, you know, some ladies representing as well. That was wonderful. And, you know, it's like, well, that's a community that really, in a nutshell, defines what community is. And because it's very eclectic and it's not just one demographic that is being represented. So. And I hate that it's not around anymore. I would love for Louisiana to be able to, you know, represent like that again. But it was nice for that time period of what, especially right after Katrina, because mm-hmm. Katrina was just a punch to the gut.
Yeah.
And we kind of, you know, needed that to feel normal again. So kudos to the guys who brought that to the forefront out of Baton Rouge. But, you know, speaking about, you know, different venues or clubs or whatever, you know, that's what's so wonderful about Celebration. That's what's mm-hmm. so wonderful about the Cincinnati Toy Show.
Yeah.
You know, it's again, I know we've hit upon this several different times, but it really is about the people. It, mm-hmm. The toys are just kind of like, it's like the banner, you know, over a circus tent, quite honestly, you know, come mm-hmm. one, come all, because we got stuff inside here. But it's the person that you're sitting next to in the bleachers while you're watching the acrobats and, you know, the clowns juggling that, you know, quite honestly, you know, you have to kind of either get to know because you're right next against them, you know, or, you know, hey, I could be doing all this and never stick my head out of the shell. You know, I could I could just like there. I know there's guys with flying under the radar. Absolutely. Yeah. But it, like Glenn, what you said is about, you know, not just the taking and the taking, but it's also what can you give back to it? And to mention like with the men on cards, that's why, you know, with that one group that Stephen Fulcar has put up in conjunction with a lot of us men on card collectors, the front back John Kellerman combination of a group that allows us to see what all exists from a population standpoint for men on cards and what holes there are. And that helps us understand from a, you know, a scientific approach about like, well, that makes sense why we don't have this represented with this figure on this offer, so to speak. And or if something was unknown for so long, especially when John Kellerman did the book back in 2003, that kind of went, you know, underneath his detection. And here we are, you know, 20 years later, able to say, oh, wow, we do have a couple of examples of this real production piece that is found in a couple of other people's collections. That's what's so important about that. It's not about showing off. It's not about like, oh, you know, look what I got. It's really about like, it's a confirmation, so to speak, of what exists within the population as a whole, so to speak, for Menno Card. And so, yeah, from a nerdy aspect of it, that really gets me going because, you know, I get to see like, wow, look how much further I have to go. It's like, I mean, there's no way to obtain it all, obviously, right. But it's fun in the trying and, kudos to everybody who's gone to that site or gone to that group and, you know, put forth things that from their collection, because it is an endeavor by everyone. It's not done by just one person. Oh, and that's the giving back, quite honestly, about that's one aspect of the giving back about Star Wars. Not just like, oh, it's a great movie and moving on. So.
Yeah. The community that bubbled up is pretty special.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that movie. Any chances of reviving that club, Louisiana?
I really hope so. I would love that. Again, it would. The one thing I would love to do is obviously it needs to be a statewide approach, not just New Orleans and Baton Rouge.
Yeah,
you know, because
it's a challenge.
Well, as Glenn knows, I mean, anything north of Baton Rouge, it just kind of dies out as far as, you know, it's more agrarian. It's kind of like how Chicago is in Illinois. You've got that great city. You know, you've got Springfield too. But everything south of Chicago drops off to just an agrarian type of atmosphere.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. You know,
corn doesn't collect Star Wars.
No, you know, I can't imagine too many farmers. You know, I could just sit there and jive with about Star Wars in southern Illinois. Yeah. But you know, again, there's and it's rightly so that there's that part of that nation, the part of that state that produces for the rest of this nation. I mean, God bless them. The right. thing is that the same can be said about anything north of Baton Rouge all the way up to Shreveport. It's like almost all Texarkana is what it kind of becomes, you know. And, you know, and as Glenn knows, New Orleans is more European and it's set apart from the rest of the state, not to mention from the rest of the nation. It's like Austin is to Texas, you know, quite honestly, or Birmingham is to Alabama. And it's its own little entity and it has its own ideals. And but I would want that if that was to be, you know, something that could be resurrected to be obviously all encompassing to the state. And I know it's hard for people to drive. I know you guys have dealt that with the, you know, the different regions of Georgia now.
Yeah.
It's because someone coming all the way from the Florida border all the way north, that takes effort. And, you know, even though I'm an hour away from Baton Rouge, I made that drive because I was really dedicated to that group. I wanted to be sure, you know, I think we did it once a month, I believe, every first Saturday of every month, I would go on over there and we'd meet up. And it was fun. It was just something that I looked forward to from the workaday week. But it was harder for some people to say come down from Shreveport about four and a half hours away.
Wow.
Down to Baton Rouge. And so, yeah, I totally get it from those kind of states that are, you know, farther north to south than they are east to west, like, you know, you guys are in Alabama and Mississippi. So it has to be almost regionalized to that point. And it was hard getting people to even come to Baton Rouge, even people who were from New Orleans. They just they like to sleep in after a hangover, you know. Right. I mean, people are not going to
hungover in New Orleans. What?
Yeah, home. So, but yeah, it's and I get that. You know, it's there's more to life than Star Wars. But you know, you're asking one Saturday out of the month, you know, as well. Yes. And so, I think that kind of hit us hard, you know. But you know, again, it's not about meeting quota and numbers and all that, you know. It's just I think it, you know, again, it's about seeing those dedicated individuals that want to continue this. And it just kind of like died out, unfortunately, you know, 9 years after its inception. But I would love for it to start up again. And I would love, you know, again, to make it known that it's, you know, for everyone in the state of Louisiana. And if, you know, if we had to bifurcate it in a certain, from a regional standpoint, then let it be known that we're still united in doing so. So.
Cool. Do you want to go over the news or anything, Jason? Or are we, is there any, because
I think, or, I mean, I have plenty of news. I could save it for next week. The only thing I really wanted to talk about is StarWars.com and the celebration 2025.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that since we're kind of on that tangent right now.
Okay, so real quick, because before I get to that, I also want to know, Jonathan, what's your favorite Return of the Jedi figure? If that's the movie, what was, do you remember your first? What was your favorite?
I did get Admiral Akbar in the mail. Okay. I remember that.
Yeah.
But aside from him, I did like Leia Bush. I thought she was, it was, you know, there's a little bit of a mystery. I mean, you knew who it was.
Yeah.
But I like that you can remove that mask. And I think that characteristic for Lando Skiffgard is a wonderful thing too.
Yeah.
So if I had to share that stage, it would be those two figures as being my favorite because of that. That ability to, you know, unmask and mask a figure, which we hadn't seen before. Helmet on the head. Yeah, that's fine and dandy and all that. But to totally conceal that, you know, head and I like those two figures the best.
Yeah. Yeah. It's some great engineering there. Mm-hmm. I never really thought about that. There isn't any other mask removing characters in Star Wars before Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, it's like they upped their game, so to speak, or they might have been seeing. I wonder if it was because of what was done with G.I. Joe. They didn't have, trying to think, when that first wave of Joe, you really had helmets.
Mm-hmm.
And the second wave of Joe, again, it was helmets. I don't think they had, but there's this one-upmanship competition that's going on between Hasbro and Kenner at that time. And when G.I. Joe was released in 82, the middle finger they gave to Kenner was releasing 13 figures and not 12 figures. Yeah. So it's one up. So, you know, it's, and they would continue to do that. The fighting in the boys aisle, the toy aisle of every, or every store and everything was between those two major companies. They just wanted to kind of keep one upping. And I bet you there was probably something internal with Kenner's like, look, we got a movie coming out, but we want to keep those same fans. And I wonder if that was probably a little thing that, you know, because it was done in the movie, because two major characters were revealed to be allies in Jabba's palace. They wanted to really have that as a playing factor, you know, when these kids are buying these figures.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Celebration. Have you ever been to Celebration before, Jonathan?
Yes, sir. I've been to four. Nice. So far. Yeah. And they were all the Orlando's and then the Chicago.
Okay. Awesome. Well, StarWars.com ran an article this week outlining five reasons why you should go to Celebration. In the article, it said the next Celebration will be in 2025. So 2024, we're going to take a year off. What do you have to say about that, Glenn?
I'm actually pretty excited about that because doing it every year is ridiculous on budget. It's ridiculous on vacation time. It's ridiculous trying to explain to the wife, hey, I need to take a week off to go to Star Wars Celebration. I'm actually pretty excited. I think they should do it every 2 to 3 years. And that way it's, because I even talked to my wife about it. She goes, you know what? Every 2 to 3 years, you can have the green light to go because it's, we could save up for it. It's easier on the budget. Like I said, you could still fit another vacation in between those times.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited that they're going to push it to 2025. I'd like it to be in Orlando, but truthfully, a 6 to 8 hour drive from Atlanta, I'd be down with. I'd love to see it in New Orleans one time. I don't know how it would do, but it'd be fun.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it'd be more drinking for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, but, and what do? They base it upon like international flights in? Is that how they really look at a location for celebration?
I don't know. I heard a rumor. The only reason it was in Chicago is because they were too late trying to book Orlando and Anaheim, and Chicago was like their third or fourth choice. So okay. They were able to book it in Chicago, and that's why Chicago got it that one year.
Okay.
So I'm assuming that they're going to keep it between Orlando and Anaheim just because that's where Disney parks are, and they could make, you know, extra money opening the park up for a night. And people, you know, oh, I'm in Orlando or I'm in Anaheim, I'm going to go to the Disney park while I'm here.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Just makes sense from a synergy aspect. I did pull the top 10 largest convention centers in the U.S.
Yeah.
So let me run through that real quick.
Go for it. Nope.
Because I'm betting it's going to be East Coast, and I'm pretty certain it's going to be Orlando. Like you say, I think they're going to bounce back and forth. But you got the wild card. They did Chicago. So there's always the possibility that they'll do something else. The biggest convention center in the United States is McCormick Place in Chicago with 2.6 million square feet of exhibition space. That's obviously Celebration 2019. Follow that up with the second is Orange County Convention Center in Orlando with 2.1 million. That's where they had 2010, 2012, and 2016. Mm-hmm. Probably 2025.
I hope so.
Do you know what the third largest convention center in America is, Glenn?
The way you're asking me, I'd assume maybe the one in New Orleans. Are you
Georgia World Congress?
Oh, the
Center.
Georgia World, dude, that place is huge. It's from what I understand, I'm going to go, but yes, the Georgia World Congress Center is so huge that they had to make the curvature of the earth. You know, they had to
factor that in. Because wow. You can't make it flat without losing space in the middle.
Yeah.
Wow. That
would be awesome.
Have you been inside the World Congress Center?
No.
Oh, no. It's yeah.
That's right next to the old Georgia Dome.
What?
Right next to the old Georgia Dome.
Yeah, it's in that area. I'd like to see it here, but I know one of the major things is there's not a hotel type. The hotels aren't close to there, but they're building in a hotel adjacent to the World Congress Center right now. So maybe that'll be done in 2025.
Maybe.
I'd love a 45-minute trip to a celebration versus an 8-hour trip.
That'd be awesome. Mm-hmm. Not to have to sleep in a hotel, sleep in your own bed, have your own food, all that fun stuff.
You sleep during celebration?
I do, which is part of the problem. Followed that with Las Vegas with 2.5 million exhibition space. The Venetian, which is also in Vegas. It's the Venetian Hotel, 1.2 million. Kentucky Exposition Center, which I thought was interesting because it's kind of in the middle of America.
Yeah.
Or in the middle of the Midwest, I should say. That's 1.2. And then finally, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 is New Orleans with 1.1 million exhibition wow. space. NRG Park in Houston with 1 million. Anaheim Convention Center, number 9 with 1 million. Hmm. So it's one of the smaller ones in the top 10. And then the last one is San Diego. So Anaheim had 1 million square feet of exhibition space. San Diego had 615,000. So wow. It's like nearly almost half as small as Anaheim for exhibition space.
Yeah, I felt like the last celebration, they had a lot of wasted space in there. But I also know that it was COVID still, and we were still in the COVID era. So they had to, you know, allow for that. So I also feel last celebration was rushed, which we've probably already covered, but it feels like it was really rushed versus what London's getting, because London's getting a ton of, you know, a lot more A-list celebrities, and it just feels like it's a better put together celebration. It felt like the one in Anaheim was like, oh crap, we need to get this done because we've got London coming up, and we have contracts, we have stuff we have to hold up on our contracts we have to do or hold up, or we're going to lose a bunch of money, so let's just do a celebration and then we'll go to London. Because London's like what was like 10 months away from Anaheim.
Yeah, it was a pretty quick turnaround.
So yeah, it definitely, looking at everything, it feels like Anaheim was just, oh crap.
I would imagine that at the end of London, they're going to say 2025 in Orlando. See you then. Bye.
Yeah. Which way?
Especially if they already have the date, I would assume they've already, or the year, I would assume they already have the date and the location planned out, ready to go.
Oh, with planning a convention that huge, they have to.
Yeah. Colorado Convention Center, where they had the first celebration, is the 12th largest in the country, with 584,000 square feet. And then Indianapolis had Celebration 2 and 3. I couldn't find where they ranked, but they had 566,000 square feet of exhibition space.
I'd really like to go back in time to that first celebration or second celebration where everything is dirt cheap and nobody knows what's going on. And it's, you know, there's not a lot.
There's like a torrential flood in the first celebration.
Yeah, that's why I said the second one, because the first one I knew it flooded out. Because it's in a tent. It was in a tent or something like crazy like that.
Yeah. I was really bummed I couldn't make it. I was a poor college kid. Was it 99, that first celebration? There was no way that I can make it from Fort Lauderdale on my own to Colorado.
Wow. Well, I didn't find out about Celebration till the one before. So I guess it would be like 15, the one before 17 that was in Orlando. Because they did one in Orlando, and then they did one in Anaheim, and then they did Orlando again. And I knew about the Anaheim one. And then my wife was like, you're not going to Anaheim. And then they did Orlando. And I'm like, bye. I'm going.
Yeah. So you said you went to Anaheim, Jonathan?
No, I did not. You went to I went to all the Orlandos and Chicago. Yeah. I'd been lined up to go to that second Anaheim, but it didn't work out, unfortunately. But it'd be great, because I know whether you had the LA one, then you had two Anaheims. So the West Coast has seen, you know, share of it. I wasn't really aware of them until I think that either the first or the second Indianapolis. And I just didn't think like, well, I don't know how I'm going to be able to fit that into a work schedule. I didn't know much about it. And then my friend was trying to get me to go to that LA one, the fourth one. And I'm like, I don't know. It seems like it's going to be massive. And especially in a city like that. Regretful, but at the same time, it's nice what it eventually leads to, because then that fifth one was Orlando in 2010. So it's neat because it's such an overwhelming experience. Like, wow, it's more than what I thought I could come across. And, you know, the room sales later on, the mythical room sales are amazing. Then get to finally see people that you've conversed with online, especially, you know, coming at it from Rebel Scum time period.
Yeah,
because I'd been on that probably as early as 2005 when I first got on, and was a lurker for a little bit, and then started to contribute what I could and with what little burgeoning collection I had at that point, because I didn't think it was going to match up against what all these other heavy hitters had. And what you come to find out is like there's no real ranking, being in a caste system of any sort, it's kind of frowned upon in the Star Wars community. I know there's people who do come in trying to throw their weight around, but that's kind of, it's quelled almost immediately. We don't govern by that. And
we don't serve their kind here.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. And that's kind of neat. It's refreshing in that respect. I mean, people will still quarrel over toys. Grown men will always fight over toys, no matter what community it is. But it's nice to kind of know that you have to kind of like leave your guns at the entrance to the saloon, you know, before you start talking shop in our community. And that's nice. That's rewarding. And at Rebel Scum was always it declined into something that it's nothing that it used to be, but it is neat to kind of go back and see what's being spoken about or what's being discussed, even from that generation that is new and it's not just on Facebook. There's still new people that are coming into it that are, oh, there's Rebel Scum, and there's all these archival aspects of it that still do exist. And of course, there's great websites like Star Wars or SWAC, or I'm sorry, SWCA, excuse me, and other things that are there to help us, not forget what findings have been, you know, done in the past, or what research, especially with the groups in the 90s that were dumpster diving and brought all that wonderful stuff to, you know, that was meant to be thrown away by Kenner. So,
yeah, I've got stuff from those guys, and you talk to them about it and they're just like, oh, yeah, I found that in a dumpster. And you're just like, what? I bought trash, you know?
Yeah. And that's neat. You know, like Tom Neuheisel is incredible what he kept from the morgue, mm-hmm. and all the stuff that he eventually was, you know, especially on Rebel Scum, we could get a list of what he had for sale. And it wasn't just production pieces, but obviously it was a lot of, you know, like printers, proofs, and some other prototype aspects of collecting that he had. And at that time, it was cheap when you look back. And, but then you're like thinking, oh man, do I have $500 for a, you know, Kenner's Well of the Souls printer's proof, you know, pieces like that. I mean, I remember buying at Celebration 6 from Brock Walker a nice printer's proof of the Dewback that he had framed and matted. And it was, at the time, it was a steal, because most of the work was in the, you know, the mounting of it.
Yeah, the framing.
And he just said, I don't want to take it back to Kentucky. I'm like, okay, I'll give you $400 for that. That's fine. And I had, you know, my own vehicle. I was not flying. So I just, you know, laid it flat, and I finally was able to put it up in the hallway during 2020. My wife capitulated and said, fine, you can have that one piece beyond the wall. And so I was like, well, thank you. So it's the only thing that, if you're visiting the house, the only thing would make, you know, you think, oh, someone likes Star Wars, if you didn't come into this room.
Yeah, but that's kind of how mine's laid out too.
Yeah. I'm kind of lucky then.
Yes.
It's changed a little bit, but you walk into my house and whoa, Star Wars.
So since we've done this backwards, do you want to talk about pickups this week? Did you guys get anything?
Just as the Micro Galaxy Squadron stuff off Amazon's all I picked up. The whatever the lad is, the minimalist lad, is that what that one, the giant, we thought it was a tiger shark, but come to find out it's a Rancor.
Yeah, from the Clone Wars.
From Clone Wars, the Tricoski Clone Wars. And then I picked up the Poe X-Wing, which is the orange and black and orange X-Wing, which I think that's just an awesome color combination. And then I picked up the First Order TIE Fighter last night with the blind box.
Yeah.
Because I came back. So that's all I got.
I pre-ordered all of those. The Anakin Obi-Wan, they came. I got the chases because it was a bundle.
So yeah.
It's got the blind boxes. I got the two chases out of that, which was incredible. I was at Target. I've always wanted a miscarded upside down, you know, you would see the vintage figures upside down. I'm like, that's too expensive for me. Even the TVC, the new vintage collection stuff. I was never lucky to find one in Target. I know people who have them. I've always wanted one of those. I was walking in Target and they did have the Micro Galaxy Squadron Asajj Ventress upside down. And I'm like, is this real? Is this? I'm looking at it and I'm like, yeah, this is real. So I was able to pick up an upside down carded Micro Galaxy Squadron vehicle. So even better, that's kind of my jam, those mini vehicles. So
did you get anything, Jonathan?
It's, you know, again, when you're, you think you'd have everything you could possibly need when dealing with vintage carded at you know, over 500 examples of them. But you eventually come across one or here there. So I finally got like a debut Han Bespin on a 41A with a survival kit offer. I was able to pick that up. I was able to, you know, get a couple other, you know, just indiscriminate carded figures, nothing really enough to write home about. But a friend of mine who is a little bit more persuasive than myself handed me a box Soundwave from Transformers.
Nice. Wow.
I'm like, oh no, like, and knowing that was like one of my favorite, it's probably my only favorite Transformer in that whole group, because I'm just not a robot guy in that sense.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, you know, and you know, say, name the price. I'm like, gosh, that's just too good to really pass up on. So that, I haven't absolutely accepted it yet, because I don't know if that's the route I want to go to, because if I actually take it in, it'll become a thing. It'll be, become a rabbit hole, you know, but it's beautiful, you know, the way, again, how Hasbro kind of did things back then, especially the way that they treated that property. I mean, that was if G.I. Joe wasn't, then Transformers certainly was a money maker. And because the price point is so much, it's a little more grand than what we were spending on G.I. Joe at the time. So that, again, I shouldn't count that as an acquisition, but it is certainly something that's tempting. And I can see why there are Transformer collectors out there. I think just Soundwave was always kind of a cool, you know, collected character, and he's not governed by any kind of emotion, I guess, or anything like that. And he looks like he belongs to Cobra, you know, he's blue. He's got the covered mouth. It's kind of weird. I mean, now the same as Optimus Prime has a covered mouth, you know, as well, but I just never associated. He's too, you know, too good.
Yeah.
But Soundwave's just bad, you know, and he belongs, like he could work with the Cobra itself, and, you know, from a deceptive standpoint. I think that's the hardest thing. Like when you have so much crap at some point, like the only other recourse I have is to be patient, because I could totally, like, from a financial standpoint, I could really screw myself in the sense, like, going after everything I possibly want.
Right.
Yeah.
But again, the key word I really feel is patience, you know, when it comes to, like, the way I collect and what works best for me. I'm not saying this is what everybody should follow, but from what I have found in it, you know, from having doing it from 89, you know, because that's when I stopped being a kid, I really feel that there was a collector mindset that, you know, I took on that spirit of collecting. And from that time, I've been able to either overindulge or literally just, you know, whoa, hold off. Because, you know, I've had times, like when I was working on a movie in Baton Rouge, and we'd get per diem, you know, for that week. So according to the union, you know, they'd give you about $300 worth of per diem when you're away from home. So what was I doing? I was sending that money to a guy up in Washington State and buying everything. Boxed, was it sealed A-Wing, sealed Skiff, boxed unused contents, Cloud City, everything I could get my hands on from this old rebel scummer, basically, that was getting out of it. And a sealed, there was a sealed droid, Empire Strikes Back droid factory, not the Star Wars example, but the Empire Strikes Back example, that they found a case of up there in the Northwest. And this is one of them that were probably six, I think, were packed to a box, I believe. Yeah. And this is one of that he had gotten. And, you know, like, a couple $100 here. So my wife found out about that. She put the brakes on it real quick, because she's like, whoa, wait a minute. Aren't you supposed to be eating on this money? I'm like, yeah. I'm taking, you know, stuff from Crafty home to, you know, back to the hotel at night, and I'm eating off that so I could kind of live, so to speak.
Yeah.
And still send this per diem to, you know, these collectors and everything. And so that was kind of like, you know, my wife's like, no, that's, you know, you need to stop. That seems a little, we can be obsessive at times as collectors, as human beings, you know. It doesn't have to take Star Wars to do that, but it's whatever the thing is, you don't want that to be in control of your life, you know?
Right.
And I've found that I could be an obsessively compulsive individual in that sense when it comes to this. I mean, it's attractive. It's really a great toy line.
Yeah.
But is it something that, you know, I needed to overindulge in? So I was able to find it, like, look, finding that piece of just knowing I don't have to have it, but if it does come within my sphere, my, you know, field of vision, so to speak, then I absolutely, if, you know, appropriate, will acquire it. So
yeah, what I hear from you is patience and balance.
Yeah,
make sure both of them are
in order. It does, and I really think that's important. I think, you know, that just means we have control.
Yeah,
we get control back as a collector. I'm not saying you have to, you know, people can budget themselves. Absolutely, they can, you know, do whatever they want with their money. I'm not their daddy. The thing is, what has worked for me because of my personality You know, I have to put it into perspective and put it into better control in that sense. And, you know, again, because of the internet, we can have anything we want at any point. It's incredible as long as you have the money.
Right.
And, but you can, what it also means to say is for whatever budget, we can still collect and still be happy with whatever, you know, look, I'm blessed. I'm very, this is an opportunity that is not given to, you know, a lot of people, quite honestly. I just happened to be at the right place, right time. I had no idea what I was doing as that kid. My dad had every right to admonish me for that, you know, and I didn't, and it wasn't in a rebellious spirit that I decided to do that. You know, it wasn't like, I'll show you, Dad. I'll collect every last Star Wars. It wasn't that at all. It was just like, well, it was a toy line that was introduced to me by my mother. And I absolutely enjoy it. And, you know, she's not with me anymore, but this technically still exists in that standpoint of what, you know, she introduced to me. And she, you know, she nurtured that, you know, that love that, you know, that we got out of playing with it. And it, you know, it fostered our imaginations. And that those developmental years of being a kid, those are so important. Those are so important. We have to remember that this is just a tool. These toys are just a tool, and they, when we interrupt that natural developmental period of being a child, disastrous things can become, you know, the adult in us. You know, it's sad when things are done to children. It's sad when things, when a child can't grow up as well as we did when we were young, that we had that opportunity, how we take it for granted, you know, of what our mothers and our fathers did for us, even though we weren't aware. Right. But when we're put in a bad situation, it's like, man, it can go so sour by the time we become an adult. This is such a first world problem, you know, quite honestly. Yeah. It really is. But
absolutely.
But I say that, you know, with all, you know, respect and everything, this is absolutely it's something I shouldn't have. And I completely, you know, am humbled by it. You know, by the way I've able to been to acquire it, and again, it's just right place, the right time. The '90s was a crazy time, you know. So
great. And what you said, right place, right time, I think a lot of people don't realize is you've been collecting for 30 plus years, and you started when things were $10 a piece. That's why you can have 500 some odd men on cards. Right. Is you were paying, you were started 30 years ago when you can buy them for dirt cheap. Now they're $400 or $500, and you couldn't do that collection today.
Right.
No, that needs to be said. That's absolutely correct. And I could not, if I had to start all over again, it'd be an even slower process.
Right.
And it probably, because I'd be looking at a price tag that is much, you know, higher than anything I was dealing with 30 years ago, it would then make me think, I can only maybe acquire some, you know, Jedi Java Goons type, you know, figures and be happy with that. Or try to, you know, the other thing that people do is like sell off aspects of their collection to fund other things. That's never been, you know, I guess fun with me. Because I just, whatever I acquire, I'm happy. I must have set it to, you know, it's like, I want that. I'm going to keep it. And that's just it. That's just quite, and I'm happy with it. So I must have made that decision at the point of purchase that, you know, why would I second guess myself in that sense? But I know there's people that do tend to like to do that because they may have made it fallen out of favor, or it may have just, I don't love that item anymore. But it's certainly better doing that way than dipping into the funds that would go towards, you know, a mortgage payment or electricity bill or even your kids eating and everything. That's depressing.
Right.
You know, so, but yeah, it's, again, to your point, Glenn, you're absolutely correct in that, because I could not amass this, you know, in the same fashion with the same amount of money. There's just no way.
Right.
Well, I do have a hard stop. I have to go to IKEA.
Well, hold on. Let me do something real quick. I want to do this real quick and then you can go. Because I don't want to wait on this box for another week.
Okay, go.
Yeah. Okay, so Lori, the guy you're supposed to be sending the TVC figures stuff to.
Yeah, that's going to be sent today.
It'll be sent today, Lori. But anyway, he sent us a package, and it was basically thanking us for the TVC figures. It's some things that he picked up in UK while he was there for the holidays, and he thinks they're UK exclusives. He's not sure. I have no clue what's in the box. And he's like, you guys can just, you know, figure out who gets what. But I wanted to do this real quick because I did, like I said, I don't want to hold on to this for another week. And then Jason will figure out, you know,
I'll get what's it in going the mail, on. I who promise. Gets what. I'm sorry.
Huh?
I'm sorry. I'll get it in the mail.
Well, no, we'll figure out. I think. All right. So they're definitely. Okay. Hold on. They're packaged pretty good. Let me.
Unboxing on an audio podcast.
Well, we can
look at that, people.
Oh my goodness! Hold on. Oh my god, dude, we're gonna fight over these. Can you tell what I could tell what they? Hold on, these are getting me excited.
Jaws. Is it Jaws something?
It's Jaws and Back to the Future cereal.
Ooh. Oh.
Oh, we're gonna fight over the Back to the Future one, buddy. Oh my god, hold on. I can't open them.
Are they vintage or are they modern?
No, they're UK exclusive cereals that they
okay. So they're modern.
My goodness, he taped these up good.
They're protected. They're well protected.
They're well protected. This is amazing. I am.
Well, while you wrestle with that, I just want to say, Jonathan, thank you. This has been a blast to talk to you. I really appreciate your perspective and your expertise in the hobby. And it's been great talking to you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. And thank you for giving me the opportunity. Absolutely. It means a lot. And
I'm glad we were able to get you on.
Oh, absolutely. I you know, that you guys even allowed that to happen, to open that up to someone like me. It means a lot. All the greater success to your podcast as you go forward.
Thanks. You got it open, Glenn?
I'm trying. Here's the Jaws one.
Nice. Beating time.
So are they little swimmers? Are they just all like, or are they?
Back to the Future. Hold on. I'm going to
search of calcium.
Source of calcium and iron. Multi-grain chocolate balls. Sorry,
well,
Jason.
Well, you do love the chocolate balls.
Yes. Put them in my mouth and suck them. Anyway, they are, it's sharks. Starfish. Multi-grain shapes. These are amazing, Lori. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, Jason. You get the Jaws one. Thanks. This is awesome. Sorry, I love me some Back to the Future stuff.
All right, well,
read the thing, Jason.
Thank you for listening to the Smuggler's Galaxy podcast. If you could, please leave a like and a 5-star review of the show anywhere you listen to podcasts. If it's allowed, it really helps us out and points people to the show. Follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Send us an email or message us. We'd love feedback, and we'd love to make you part of the show. Our email address is smugglersgalaxy@gmail.com. Thank you to Alfonso Riviera for the Smuggler's Galaxy logo. You can find him at Rock the Force Podcast, and thank you to Levi Waterhouse for the music. Hasbro, re-release VC66, hashtag vote with your wallet. Pass on what you've learned. Be a positive force in the collecting community. This is the way.
This is the way.
This is the way.